In the book of Judges, we want to pick up tonight in chapter 16. We're back in the swing of things. If you were not here last Thursday night, we took an overview of chapters 13, 14, 15, and we just looked at one word kind of for each chapter. And we said that in chapter 13, that he was running from the will of God, Samson. And then in chapter 14, we said that he was resisting. And so the key word was resist. And Samson was constantly resisting the authority of God within his life. And then we ended in chapter 15, and we talked about that he was reacting, that he was constantly reacting, burning up fields and killing people and getting upset. And here was a man that was called by God to do the work for God. And God had a difficult time with this man because he was unwilling to yield the one area of his life that God really wanted. And that was that area of the flesh. And you could say that Samson had a slow-burning lust, and it took him out of the ministry. It destroyed his life. And so tonight, we'd like to take a look at Judges chapter 16 as we begin to move on. And we want to just look at three verses tonight, in verses 1 through 3. And if you're taking notes, you can jot down dormant, but not dead. And what I mean by that is that sin sometimes becomes dormant, but it's never gone. Until that day that God takes us home, and he takes us away from the presence of sin. And we will once again see that we are changed in the image of God. But until that day, there is always that moment that I can be tempted. There's always that day, that time, that hour, that sin might once again pop up. And with Moses, we saw that it was anger. That early in his life, he killed that Egyptian. And because of that, it drove him into the wilderness. And towards the very end of his life, it was anger that kept him out of the promised land. He became angry and took the stick and smote the rock and began to cry out to the people. And he was upset. And so the very thing that got him in trouble took him out. And I think that oftentimes within our life, it's usually that same way. That one thing that really has baffled us, mocked us. That one thing of its pride or jealousy or insecurity or anger or just whatever it might be, lust or greed, oftentimes that is the battle that you will fight for the rest of your life. And though God will give you the victory, and there will be great moments, oftentimes it's when we're doing the very best, this thing will begin to creep back up and stick its ugly head up and begin to do a horrible thing in our life. And it was David, you remember, that when he was prospering, that he fell into sin. And it was Uzziah, as he prospered, that he was smitten with leprosy because he was prideful. And oftentimes, it's in the very end, Elijah, as he was doing a tremendous work for God, he wanted to commit suicide. And it's in the times that you do well. It's in the times that God begins to prosper your life, that for some reason we stop trusting or stop looking or stop thinking that things can happen to us. And we begin to believe in ourselves, and all of a sudden we find that we sometimes can be a lot like Samson here. And so we read in Judges chapter 15, verse 20, "And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So for 20 years he was judging Israel. And then it declares in chapter 16, verses 1 through 3, "Then went Samson to Gaza and saw there a harlot and went in unto her. And it was told the Gazites, saying, Samson has come hither. And they compassed him or encircled him and laid wait for him all night in the gates of the city. And they quiet all the night, saying, In the morning when it is day, we shall kill him. And Samson lay till midnight, arose at midnight, and took the doors of the gate of the city, and the two posts and went away with them, the bars and all, and put them upon his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the hill that is before Hebron. Now, either it is actually the mountain, which would be about 38 miles or so, and Gaza was about 100 feet above sea level, and this mountain was about 3,300 feet above sea level, so he would have to hike 40 miles and go up a hill and stick this thing in, or it means the hill before Hebron, which is about 8 miles away. Either way, it was an incredible feat. And some believe that the gates were anywhere from 30 to 40 feet wide and anywhere from 20 to 30 feet high, and they weighed anywhere from 1,000 to 2 tons. And he pulled these things out, and the posts were the size of telephone poles. He pulled them out. He had an attitude. They locked him in. He pulled them out, stuck them on his back, marched up to the hill, stuck them in the ground, and mocked them. And that's what he did. And we think, what a tremendous gift. What a foolish man he was. Using the strength that God gave him to show off. Using the very God-given talents he had for his own gain. And God gave him that ability. But he never understood that. And better yet, he really didn't want to understand it. He knew that he was called. He resisted. He played with the Lord. He toiled with sin. And we now come to the very end of his life in a very tragic way. And there's no one in the history of the Bible that displays more physical strength. And many believe that he really wasn't a buff man. I was listening to Bob Coy, and he said, he's a lot like me, Bob Coy, real tiny. And that kind of makes a little bit of sense. A guy that you wouldn't believe has incredible strength. And so God would take someone weak and make him powerful, able to kill 1,000 men at a time. And he had that unique ability to do the work he wanted to do. And Elijah had spiritual strength, you remember? And Noah had a physical endurance for 120 years to build the ark. But to this man, God gave tremendous strength to be able to catch 300 foxes, to be able to kill anyone he wanted to, 1,000 at one time, to be able to pull the pillars of a temple down and destroy 3,000 at the very end of his life, to be able to mock them and to baffle them and to put the fear of God in these people, and yet it never really got into his own personal heart. And God had blessed him, and the Spirit had spoken to him, and men feared him. But the problem is, very important, is in the power, he never understood humility. And it was kind of a real revelation for me as a senior pastor, that if you really want power, there has to be humility. And humility is born out of power. In other words, if I have power, it should humble me. If God's given me authority, it should break me. If God is using me, it should really baffle me. Like Nehemiah, when all of a sudden he said to the people, "We did not eat of the king's table, nor did we take of their money." In other words, we could have, but we would not abuse our authority. We wanted to set an example. And so in his authority, Nehemiah made a decision not to violate that. That's humility. And sometimes when we get power, or we have a position, or God has given us a place, or God has given us a talent, we use that to shame people. Or we use it for our own glory. And it will backfire on you every single time, because God gave that to you that you might be able to help people and minister to them and not manipulate them. And we find that he did that. And because of that, we find that his eyes were plucked out because of his foolishness. His hands were tied. His feet were bound. His hair was shaved. And he was mocked. He was taken out by a woman. We'll see that next week. But he had everything. He had everything going for him except the fear of God. He had everything he could ever want, but he did not fear God in his life. And it's interesting to me that he could destroy a lion, but he couldn't really surrender his spirit. He could break the bands of the rope, but he really couldn't listen to the Holy Spirit. He had tremendous ability, but he was so weak in the realm of the spirit, and his life was marred and destroyed in such a powerful way. And what happened to him? I think it was pride. It says in Proverbs 16, verse 18, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. You're going to see this man fall. You're going to see a man that God chose, a man that God blessed, a man that God empowered, lose his ministry and lose his life and lose his eyes and lose all his freedom because he wouldn't pay attention. And he didn't believe that God would do it to him. In other words, he was too big for his britches. And then in 1 Corinthians 10:12, wherefore let him that thinketh he stand take heed that he might fall. And so the warning. And so in verses 1, 2, and 3, I want to lay out five simple things that God really spoke to my heart. And maybe it's just for me, but one of those studies that the word just kind of exploded in every single verse. And I want to give you these five things, and we'll come back to them. Number one, the endurance of sin. The endurance of sin. And what I mean by that is that sin will never let you go. It's going to follow you. It's going to try to take you out. It's going to watch you. It's going to wait for that moment. And if it has to wait 30 years, and all of a sudden when you're traveling and you're away from your wife and you've been married and it takes you to a place that you've never been before and you get in a fight with your wife, at that moment you yield to temptation, sin will take you out. Sin doesn't like you. Sin doesn't want a fellowship with you. Sin wants to destroy you. And so sin has an incredible endurance. Secondly, sin is exciting. There's nothing bad when you think about it because sin is fun. I mean, you don't go, why go eat broccoli when you can have a pizza? You know, and why have, you know, carrots when you can have donuts? And sin is fun. And so that's why there's fornication, and that's why there's adultery, and that's why there's cocaine, because there's an excitement, there's a thrill to it. Pornography, there's an excitement, a thrill to it. If it wasn't, you wouldn't. It'd be like all of a sudden looking at something that has no temptation. For me, peanut butter cookies are like the cookie of the Antichrist. I look at them, you can put them right there, they're just like the worst thing. I mean, if I eat that, I'm going to die. If I had milk or anything, I got to wash it down. I can't handle it. So it's not a temptation. It's not exciting. You put a chocolate chip cookie there, that puppy is exciting. I will justify it. I will say in my mind, I'm going to walk a little bit. I'll eat that thing because I'm excited. I get thrilled. My mind, my heart, everything. This is exciting stuff right here. When my wife says, we're going to have a salad, that's not an exciting thing. When she says, let's go get in and out, that's an exciting thing. This is the way it is. And thirdly, it's an emptiness of sin. There's an emptiness of sin. In other words, there's a void, and sin has an emptiness within his life. And always when I'm searching and wanting and I'm looking and I got a call and I don't have any friends, there's a loneliness, an emptiness, and I'm trying to fill that, and that's the danger oftentimes. And fourth, the evil of sin. In other words, it's going to seek to trap you and snare you. It's going to set you up. It's going to bring a pretty thing in your life. You're going to be ugly, and it's going to bring this pretty thing, and she's going to like you. And you're going to think, why, man, how could she like me? Well, she's blind, probably. But in other words, it's going to do things that this is just unbelievable what's happening. And then all of a sudden, lastly, there's an end of sin. It will kill you. And I think that Samson, in these three verses, and I think it's just something God gave to me for myself, but I want to share with you the danger of why we ought not to sin. And I think it's good stuff when you really think about it, because it lays it out in a way that maybe you've never seen it before. Well, let's look at this. In verse 1, the endurance of sin. In other words, notice in Judges 15, verse 20, we'll start there. He judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Now, that's interesting to me. In other words, somewhere along the line, towards the very end, probably, of these 20 years, he was taken out. He was tempted. So there was a moment where God began to work in his life. And we know that because it says in Hebrews 11:32, "And what shall I say more of the time that would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and of Samson?" In other words, very few men and women had their name written in Hebrews chapter 11, the Hall of Faith. So God looked upon him and saw that there were some great things that he did in a life of faith. There were some tremendous moments that he did trust God. He did look to God. And God, because of that, honored him and put his name there. But somewhere down the road, he forgot. Somewhere down the road, he began to believe in who he was. And it says 20 years went by. Now, here's the difference, and maybe you don't realize this. You remember when Daniel was in the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar died, and Belshazzar took over. And you remember there in Daniel, I believe, chapter 5, where it says, "Mene, mene, tekel, upharsis." And they couldn't figure it out. And the king now is seeking to get an answer, Belshazzar. And so all of a sudden, Nebuchadnezzar's wife, who was still alive, said, "There's a man in your kingdom who's able to tell you. His name's Daniel." So they went and got him, and they brought him back. And he was able to say, "Mene, mene, tekel, upharsis. You've been weighed, found wanting, and numbered your history. You're dead." And what fascinates me about that is he remained faithful for 20 years of his life. So when it was time to be called, he was ready to move. So I believe it's not waiting, it's preparing. I believe if you're not married, you need to prepare for the day you are. If you're married, you need to prepare how to be someone better. Your whole life is not waiting, it is preparing. You occupy until the day comes. And here we find Daniel, he was ready, but Samson, he was out. In other words, it was gone. He lost that glory of God within his own life. And Samson enjoyed it, but something happened. And once again, it should have humbled him, but it didn't. And Satan knew it. And Satan began to watch. And Satan was waiting. And all of a sudden, we read here that he now begins to have 20 years and he begins to return to his old ways. Notice he says in verse 1, he went down to Gaza. In other words, he went down. In other words, he's searching, he's looking, he's returning, he's going back. And this is the city of the Philistines. And it was a very popular place. It was by the seaport of the Mediterranean, about 2-3 miles away. And for some reason, he just loved the Philistine country. Earlier, you remember in chapter 14, he went down to Timnath. And there he said to his mom and dad, "I want that woman." So he wanted to marry a Philistine woman. But his mom and dad rebuked him. But he said to them, "I don't care. Get this woman for me." And you remember the story. Eventually, this woman was killed. She was burned alive. And Samson went crazy. So God saved him because of this first woman in chapter 14. So his ministry continues, and now another woman comes into his life. He goes down to a city just to kind of check it out. But the thing that fascinates me more than anything else is that sin will never, ever take its eyes off of you. It will wait. It will look. And it doesn't make a difference how you feel, what you're going through. It could care less. Jesus came to destroy it. He didn't want to reason with the flesh. He wanted nothing to do with the flesh. He said, "Crucify the flesh." In other words, I don't want to talk to the flesh. I want to talk to your spirit. But we, for some reason, hold on to things, keep things alive, keep the bitterness going, and Satan knows it. And he watches and he waits till that bitterness or that greed begins to grow. And in that moment we're angry with God, he comes and all of a sudden he attacks. So first of all, I begin to realize he toiled with it. He thought about it. And he messed with it. He toiled with it. He thought, I need to go. And that's what sin does. It begins to talk to you. You need to go down to that party. You need to go have a beer. There's nothing wrong with that. Go ahead and have a joint. Remember how you're going to feel? It's going to feel pretty good. Hey, it's okay to go over the Chippendales and see and minister and share Christ with those people. It's okay. Go. You know, well, really? Yeah. And all of a sudden, you're watching television, and now you're thinking, well, you know, if I sin at home, it's okay, as long as I don't do it out in public. What? Why are you thinking that way? You see, sin is waiting, and sin is going to seek to take you out. You've got to turn to Christ. You can't deal with the sin. You can't reason with the sin. You can't go against Satan. But Christ can go against Satan. Even Michael wouldn't mess with Satan. He said, the Lord rebuke you. And we are trying to reason with our sin. I'll deal with this sin. I'll get out of this habit. You can't. You need to be delivered. You need Christ in your life. And we would rather deal with our sin than surrender to Christ. We would rather justify why we have an attitude than to say to God, God, change me in my heart. Anything I can do to stay away from Christ or not have to deal with Christ, I'm going to do it. My flesh does not want to yield. It refuses to humble itself. And that's why the Bible says when one man or one woman humbles himself, all of heaven goes crazy. Why? Because it's natural to be bitter. It is unnatural and supernatural to be forgiven. And when all of a sudden you are willing to be obedient, when you have lived a lie and you're willing to walk before God, when you've lived with the enemy and you've turned from idols to serve a living God, it is a major, major thing. And it's not you, it's God in you, the hope of glory. It's God working in your heart. But 20 years... and Satan was watching. And Satan knew his weakness. And Satan was willing to be patient. But the second thing that really stands out is the excitement of sin. Notice it said in chapter 16, verse 1, not only is it endearment, but it's also exciting. He went to Gaza. And Samson went. In other words, he went down to that city. It was a thriving city, as I said. And I don't know why he went. I'll tell you what I think. I think I'll go out and check it out. That sounds good. I think there's a new Starbucks down there, and I'll just go see what's happening in Las Vegas on the Strip. I think I'll go down there and just kind of walk the Strip and see what's happening and see if I get in for free, you know, see if God leads me, guides me by the Holy Spirit. Listen to what you're saying. You know you ought not to go down there, but you're tempting the Lord. You know you have no business doing what you're doing. But you're hoping that God might open the doors. You know that he doesn't want you to do those things, but in your heart you're doing them. So now you have to figure out, how can I do them and not get in trouble? So your whole mind and your whole heart is bent on trying to figure out a way that you can sin and not get in trouble. And I'll tell you, it will destroy your life. It is so much easier to surrender than to try to figure God out. God, I'm going to give you my life. And that's what I mentioned to you when Mary said, do unto me according as you have spoken. In other words, take my flesh and use it for your glory. When you do that, you have definitely surrendered the most critical point of your life, your flesh. How you live, how you think, God, take my body, use it, change it. Change my personality, change my thinking process, change my attitude, help me to love. God, do what you want. And so the excitement. And no doubt, a popular place, he wanted to go down there, check it out, maybe meet some friends. And what he didn't realize, and this is what I want to teach you tonight. He didn't realize that by going down there, it was now going to be the beginning of the end. In other words, it was too late. He crossed over. And there are many times that we cross over and God brings us back. There's many times that we tempt the Lord and God brings us back. There are many times we get ourselves into situations and God redeems us. But this time, it took him out. And you never know the consequences of doing something. But he knew that it was a Philistine country. He knew that they hated him. Now let me give you a little bit of insight. He knew, personally, he could whip him. And therefore, he explored the freedom of sin. I'm a senior pastor. I can get away with it. I'm a worship leader. They're going to worship with me. I can live in sin. In other words, he understood the calling and the ability and the power of his life to be able to do things, and therefore he knew he could talk his way out, fight his way out, and get taken care of. And so he went down. And it just so happened that there was a harlot, a prostitute. And without even batting an eye, he got excited. And when you are where you ought not to be, you think that maybe God opens doors. Well, God opened the door here for me to work here at this bar. You know, Satan opens doors. Well, God opened this door for me to marry this non-believer. Really? Yeah, I'm going to get her saved. Well, great. But you've already violated. It's not God's perfect will. And we begin to fight with God when really it's a horrible thing, but we're excited. And he got tremendously excited. In other words, not only did he get excited, but he was flirting with sin. He saw the prostitute. He liked what he saw. Everything he saw, he wanted. Everything he wanted, he took. Now here was a man who was called by God, given the ability to minister, having the authority to do whatever God wanted him to do, and now he's using his God-given talent to satisfy his own flesh. And God knew it was over. Because he didn't know, but God knew Delilah was right around the corner. And God knew this was going to be a springboard into the second. And God knew that this would be the end of his life. And God knew his eyes were going to be plucked out, but God couldn't stop him because he wouldn't yield his flesh. And he was burning in a passion of lust, and he was being pulled away from God, driven into the enemy's camp, looking to satisfy his own flesh, and God isn't even mentioned at all. And that's what happens. You see, sin is seeking to take you out. And sin is exciting. All of a sudden, you begin to look and see, and people begin to wink at you and talk at you. And all of a sudden, you go to work, and this gal's winking at you. And you, here you are, bald and fat, and wow, she's winking at me. Well, you don't know that she has a stigma in her eye, you know? And you think she's winking at you. And you're all now excited because, you know, the wife at home is, you know, no good. And God, you really are going to give me this woman here. No, the woman at home is the one. No, she winked at me and she's coming. This is my new woman. Yeah, that's how we think. We're crazy. We are crazy people. We are gullible people. Why would God do that? God wouldn't. God doesn't tempt. Satan sets up. Satan will set you up. And Satan will do things to get you excited about sin. And Satan knows this is your weakness, and Satan's going to set it up, and all of a sudden, that $17 million home is now only $14 million. It's so exciting. But you can't afford it. What's your fun being excited about it? But why are you even thinking that way? You can't even afford $200 rent a month. Well, I don't know. Don't even go down there. Because all the energy and all the emotion and all the excitement is for waste. Because it's not for the kingdom. You see, God saved you. And God bought you. And God redeemed you. And so sin is able to excite you. And the third thing that really stood out to me more than anything else is the emptiness of sin. Notice it says in verse 1, not only did he go down, but he saw a harlot. Why was he looking? Was there something missing in his life? And why do I have to go out? And why do I have to have a date? And why do I have to get out of this marriage? And why do I have to get another job? And why do I have to have another car? You see, I'm trying to fill a void. And we all do it. I remember that time I had to have that Jeep. And I went down and bought that Jeep and brought it home. And it was a Wrangler, you know, little Jeep. And I wanted to get my hair in the wind. Now, how ridiculous is that? You know, I mean, what hair? Now, I can have a car, and there's no problem. And so I went down and got it. It was years ago, and took my wife, and we went up to the mountains. And I remember vividly when we got to the mountains, we were, how you doing? Okay. And we both had a tremendous headache and a neck ache from the bouncing that she hated the thing. And we begin to talk, and I begin to say, well, I can do this. You know, it's my money. And she looked at me, and she says, you know, it's God's money. It's not your money. How do you know? And I remember going down and seeing Romaine. He says, there's your golden calf, huh? Because it was gold. And all of a sudden, I begin to realize, well, I can do it. I can have it. But here's the key. I remember when I bought it, this will make me happy. What a tragic thing. We buy to make us happy. We get to fill a need. Your home, your car, your kids, your family will never satisfy the void in your heart. Only one thing is going to solve the inner peace that you're longing for, and that is the peace of God. And then you can have whatever. But he went down looking. He was searching. He was hoping. He needed something in his life. And I'll tell you what, sin will just leave you empty all the time. And sometimes when you have to have, and it's like that, Jesus said to the woman at the well, if you drink of this well, you're going to thirst again. He knew that she was searching. She had been through five husbands, and she couldn't find it. She couldn't find the contentment. And she said, if you drink of me, you're never going to thirst again. And some of you are searching and looking and trying and going through marriages and going through things and buying things, and it's not making you happy. It's worse. Because there's a desire, but sin leaves you empty. And I see this in a very interesting way. She went down and just one night with her, just one night. But that was the night that he was going to be taken out. And sometimes in our stupidity, in our loneliness, in our emptiness, we do foolish things. We should never, ever do things. When we find ourselves trying or going out, or all of a sudden, I want a man to hold me. You don't need a man to hold you. You need God to love you. You need a man to provide for you. Because you're going to go from one bed to another bed, and you're going to go from one relationship to another relationship. And as my wife has always taught me, Steve, a woman never leaves unless she has another man waiting. There's always something because she's not happy. She's searching. And the guy looking out his window in the book of Proverbs. Well, why is he looking out his window? Because he's not satisfied with a woman in his own bed. So when I start looking, I know something's wrong. And when you start coveting, you know something's wrong. And I'll tell you, sin will never let you go. And sin will constantly try to ruin your life and bring you to a point. But notice number four, the evil of sin. We see this in verse 2. Samson has come. This is so profound, I think. And it was told that Samson has come. Isn't that interesting? He's here. In other words, the enemy knew he was here. The enemy was searching. The enemy knew exactly where he was at. They knew that he was in the city. They knew who he was with. In fact, they were now beginning to set him up. And sin is evil. Evil. You might think it's fun to flirt with it, but I want to tell you, it will take you out. It will destroy your home. It will destroy your life. It will do everything. It will give you this and give you this and give you this and set you up. And all of a sudden, it will pull the rug out and you'll just fall apart. And notice it says here, and it was told that Samson has come. In other words, sin will set you up. And they posted guards, notice, and they knew the time and they knew where he was at. And the folly of Samson as he endangered himself even being in the city. What are you doing, Samson? Well, I just kind of wanted to go down to the liquor store. Well, you know you have a problem with Ripple. Why are you going down to the liquor store? Go to the Vons. Well, no one's at the liquor store. Precisely. You know you have a problem with lust. Why are you looking at the magazines? Well, I just thought maybe I could pray for him. No, stay away from him. It's like, well, I think I'll go for a walk on the beach. You crazy? Unless you have victory, you got to be careful. In other words, you can't put yourself in a position. It says that Joseph fled from Potiphar's wife. He ran. But sin will be evil. Sin is evil. Very evil. And all of a sudden, he thought he could get out of the city. And sin will tell you that. Oh, you can get out of this. Go ahead and watch the pornography. Watch a little of this. Go there, go here, go here. Smoke this little joint, you know, take a little bit of crack. No biggie. It doesn't tell you that. Because all of a sudden you're hooked. And just a little bit of flirting with a girl, it's okay. But you're married. It's not okay. Now all of a sudden you've lost your family, lost the kids, and lost your business, and your whole life is destroyed. Satan won't tell you that. I have a bullet through my leg to remind me what Satan gave me. He showed me this, but then I got shot, and it's a whole nother life. Christ won't hurt you. And Satan will constantly seek you, and all of a sudden, he believed it was his own power. And lastly, before communion, the end of sin. Notice it said in verse 2 and 3, they encircled him. And it was told that Samson has come, and they compassed him. And this is so kind of neat. And they laid wait for him all night in the gates of the city and were quiet all night, saying, in the morning, we will kill him. And I just want you to notice that they locked the doors. And ultimately, sin wants to lock the door so you can't get out of the pornography. And Satan wants to lock the door so the marriage is over. And sin wants to lock the door so you now have a felony. And sin wants to lock the door and bring you in bondage. And you say, what happened? What? How did I get here? Well, I'll tell you exactly how you got here. You thought one day you'd go take a trip down to the Philistine country. Let me put it in today's terms. You thought you'd go to Las Vegas and just kind of spend the night. You knew why you were going down there. You wanted to gamble. You knew exactly why you were going down there. You wanted to see the babes. You knew exactly where you wanted to stay because you know that no one's going to be there. In other words, we know. Sin draws. They came to Ono and they said, hey, Nehemiah, come have lunch with us. And Nehemiah said, I'm doing a great work for God. Get away from me. Nehemiah understood that they were going to ambush him. Satan's going to set you up. And then they said to Nehemiah, come to us inside the temple. Well, Nehemiah was a wise man because going inside the temple, he would sin against God. He didn't want to do that. And so if he can't get you this way, he's going to take you this way. So what am I saying? I'm just saying this. That Jesus Christ came 2,000 years ago. And he died for this sin. And that sin will not let you go. It's going to follow you. It knows you. It's going to come after you. It's going to bring up things. It's going to challenge you. And if you have an anger problem, it's going to baffle you. And you're going to have to really go before God and say, God, get victory in this area because I have a tendency to explode. Change me. And not only that, but I also believe with all my heart it's exciting. Sin is exciting. And Moses chose to go the way of the cross rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin. So it is exciting. So be careful. And you can see pleasure and you can see the cross. Pick up the cross. And thirdly, I believe that it will always leave you empty. You're going to start lurking and searching and think there's another guy, another woman, another boyfriend, another place. And you're going to go from church to church and church. And what are you really saying? Well, it doesn't have it here. No, it should be here. It's not out there. It's not how we do the service. It's here. If I'm at peace in my heart, I can go anywhere. And then fourthly, I realize there's an evil of sin. That if he can take Gal and I out, he can really hurt the church. And he's going to set us up. He's going to try. He's going to come against our marriage. He's going to come against our kids. He's going to, any way he can, he's going to set us up. And so I need to stay in the Word. And lastly, I know that sin wants to kill me. It wants to lock the door. It wants to bring me in bondage. It wants to destroy my life. And so all of a sudden it says he took the doors. And I believe there's only one person that can take the doors off. Only one person that can take you out of the bond. There's only one person that can destroy these gates, and that's Jesus Christ. Oh, Samson did it, but he mocked them. Don't lock me in. I'll play with you. You go get your own gates. Took a whole city to go get the gates. He's laughing, but you know something? The Philistines, they had this little woman called Delilah. and they were waiting. And Samson was laughing, and she nailed him.